So it's Tom Neary, tape 7, and you're up to your neck in water, Tom, and your telephones are out of action, aren't they?
It's down in the bottom of the trench. So I looked at Dickie Lee, at me, and the steam were coming off the water, and he was up to his necks. So he was still away. So I woke him and said, come on, you know. So we got out of the trench, and we fished the telephone out. And it was still coming down Devon's eye. It was going down. So we're there, like two bloody wet ends. And everybody else is wet besides us, of course. I could have been any wetter. So, eventually, they come from RHQ, and it was Corporal Broderick. He died, I know. And see the state we were in. He got a new telephone, and they dried that out, and then you make it right after it. So the message come, go to AS Long, we're with us then, go to AS Long, you go up there near it.
Yeah.
So the officer told me, so I went there, I don't know what did he do with Dickie Lee, I must have had a privileged position, he must have gone somewhere else. So I went up to AS Long, where Captain Quartermaster Johnny Moore was there, John Moore, he seen me, and I had me still my ribbon up from Dunkirk, the 39 star, and of course he knew me.
Mm.
He said, you wet through, that won't do. There's things to dry there, you know, you could dry them off for it and put rankings around it. You're not doing that, he said. Here, I'll find you a new suit.
Yeah.
So he gave me a new suit. Dry yourself off, put that suit on. So I said to him, could I let you in? Nice man. Thanks for your kindness, he said. Oh, I'm only too pleased to be able to help you, Neary.
Yeah.
So I got the new suit and I stayed with him for a few hours, got something to eat and warm and warm. So then I was called back to, I was there for a day, and it came up with a concert party. I never watched one before, and I never watched one since, because I know it was there to help the troops, but as the infantry, we never really seen one. So, anyhow, this was quite good. So, we had this a night, and I joined up with some of his old mates, I've been with Norbury and the rest together. So, then I went back, and then the order came, go back to A Company, because we were on the move. So we're moving then to march up to go through the Fallet Gap.
Yes.
So when I get back and I'm in line and we set and do the two signallers, up comes company commander, Major Griffin. Oh, Neary, you're back. Good. I thought, well, at least some bugger says I'm all right.
Yeah.
You know? So off we march. Well, we came to it and then we started going through it. Some put the gas masks on, too warm, they couldn't put the gas masks off. Some from the handkerchief, couldn't do the handkerchief. So you just shook and did it. There's only one smell. And you never forget it, no?
Yeah. That's what you're talking about there, Tom, is, I think what you're talking about, is the carnage.
Oh, terrible. Yeah, so you're marching through along the dusty road, and it was... even after the rain, it seemed really dried up because it was summertime, it was August. So even after all that rain, for some reason, when we did march through, it was terrible.
Hmm.
As far as you could see, the vehicles turned over, wagons where they had troops in, on the side, buses or something turned on the side, horses there, guns there, humanity stacked 3 and 4 high, and you're going through them. And the stench was incredible.
You're actually going through those lanes, Tom, were you marching, or marching?
Yeah.
Trying to pick your way through those lanes?
We marched through them,
didn't we? So you're walking across dead animals and people at times?
Yeah, do it aside. Side
of the road.
Yeah, you mark. Again, you know.
Yeah.
Right as far as you could see either side.
Yeah.
Through the fields, they were all over the way where they tried to escape.
Yes.
And no escape from, that's where the typhoons came in and rocketed the tanks and the buses and the planes come over and bombed them. And they're coming all continent and it was roaring. And, oh,
yeah.
God bless. no bloody cracked. So, we marched through that for a day, a couple of days or so, and it was awful. Anyhow, we got to a clean part, and I can't think of the name of this place, but we stopped in this orchard. They're bearing apples, but they were bitter, and it started to rain as per usual, so we got this cover off the wagon, and we made a shelter with it. Mm. Now, in the shelter, the line had been laid. We're out of action, we don't mind.
Mm.
And the line was laid, and the telephone was there inside. The orchard was there with all the company about. And was in there with the Sergeant Major, Montgomery, and the signals and the runners and so on and so forth.
Mm.
So I was on duty, I wasn't on, Dickie Lee was on. So after a few hours, I don't know what time, up comes my dear friend, Corporal Thompson, Tomo. When he got to the telephone, I cannot remember exactly whether the line hadn't been hooked, had come off the terminal, excuse me, because it was Earth Return off the terminal, or whether somebody cut a piece out on the... But whatever it was in our area, so he played hell. He played with me, poor Dickie Lee.
Yeah.
So I said, talking properly, Corporal. I don't know. I said, shouldn't have happened this, I know. I said, but we're out of the, you know, I said, we all make mistakes. You know, can't you leave it? When I get back to RHQ, I'm reporting this, it's disgraceful. I said, well, he's tired and I'm not saying it. You know, let it go at that. It's no harm done.
Mm.
He could just let it go, which he could have done.
Yeah.
All he got to do, if it had been me, I'd have said, you silly sod. There's no harm done, because that's action, you know.
Yeah.
Don't do it again. Whatever you do, else you're in trouble. But no, he went back and reported it, you see. Don't go in the kitchen, it's too bloody hot for you. And it was too hot for him. Anyhow, he reported it, so the telephone rang. Dickie Lee answered it, and he was getting terrible time. And the foolish bugger didn't know which way to. So, our grief tipped over, and he got a bloody rander. So he didn't look at me as the old soldier, and, you know. So I get some. It was Captain Hawkins. Yes, sir. He gave my poor bloody ears who were burning. He said, oh, he's giving us all sorts. Terrible it was. So I said to him in a correct way, sir, I know it shouldn't have happened, but that field, and I'm sorry, but who was on the phone? Who was on duty at that time? I said, I can't tell you, sir. I wouldn't tell him, you know.
Yeah.
I said, no, it wasn't me. But you're this and you're that and you're this and the other. So then the inaction and the nerves of it, and I said, sir, do you remember Bartle Boo? Yes, of course I remember Bartle Boo. What about Bartle Boo? I said, will you be kind enough to tell me why A Company, his action when Mentalised was at stake, and there's no communication, we went down all the way, the line wasn't broke, they didn't open up on wireless, which is the rules of signals, and there was nothing said. And now we're out of the line, there's all this fuss. I did say that to him, you know?
Yeah.
And Sergeant Major wasn't going, shut up, you silly bugger here, he said. You'll be run in. I said, well, I'd be better than being here if I didn't run in, aren't I?
Yeah.
So he said, do you know who you're talking to? I said, yes, sir. I was correct, I didn't, you know. Yes, sir. I said, I do know, but I'm putting the point to you. Right, he said, you'll be bloody on the court martial.
Serious stuff, he was saying.
Mm-hmm. Right, sir, I said. So that was the end of that. That's Sue Thompson.
This, just before that you go away from that one, this chap, his name was Hawkins, and he was, what rank was he, Tom?
He was captain.
Yeah.
He was signal platoon officer.
Right.
Who replaced Frank Johnson, who got killed.
So he was your commanding officer, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Nobody knew him, but we knew him, but nobody liked him because he was a bad bugger.
Yeah.
Being honest. I know he shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Well, he talked to the signalers like he would talk to a 10th platoon. And signalers, they're no different with all soldiers. But if he'd have used a proper way and they used a bit of humanity, you know. So anyhow, Big Mouth did this. So. But I never heard anything, you see. So we went from there. We went to another place by transport. And it's where there's factory making German uniforms. There were hundreds of thousands of yards of this material. I can't think of the name now.
But this is just after Falaise.
Yeah. But eventually, we moved from there to other towns of neither here nor there. But, so we're making our way up, so we're going up. The, eventually, if my memory is right, I'm sure we finished in Amiens.
Amiens.
Because I remember this church being there, and it was night time, there was service on, but it was clear. I'm sure we did, but I could be wrong, you know, after 40 odd years. But anyhow, we moved from there, and the other, I won't remember the other passes because I'm opening up on the wireless now, I remember, because of the communication.
Yeah.
But when you're not on, you don't know the same.
Mm.
So it was that the order was that the regiment from where we were had to get to St. Paul. Whether it was occupied, what it was, they had to get there. So we set off in his trucks and we got to St. Paul. And when we got to St. Paul, it was dark.
Well, can I just again stop you there, Tom, at St. Paul? Because I think we need to recap a bit here, because you'd gone up to, after landing in Normandy, you'd been fighting for about 2 months on your way down to Falaise, almost continuously.
Yeah.
And what you were doing is trying, the Germans were trying to chase you out of Normandy. And they were fighting very hard to do that.
Yeah.
And you, with the Americans, were trying to gain your foothold in France. And it culminated at Falaise. And that was really the end of the Battle of Normandy as such.
It was.
Yeah? Okay.
There was 7th German Army, the 4th and the 15th, I understand.
Yeah.
Of course, what I missed out were, as I go along this, we had to cross the River Seine. But we crossed the Seine without any trouble, we just went across. In vehicles.
This is before St. Paul, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, then you got from there to look to Amiens, come on the Somme.
Yeah.
And the order was that we had to take St. Paul. They didn't know when it was occupied, they didn't know anything about whether anyone was there, but we could take it whether it was or it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So up we went through, and when we got there, it was dark. And it would be around midnight, I think.
Mm.
They were out on fire in St. Paul.
Mm.
Some of the military police were on the crossroads, so when we inquired off the military police, they didn't know how much it was occupied, if any. But the orders were to go through St. Paul and we to take these villages of Sains and Tangri.
Yeah.
And another name.
Yeah.
And we to take them. So.
Valoon, was it? Tom?
Valoon, Sains and Tangri. That's the three villages running one more or less than the other. So we embossed in the TCVs, preceded by the carriers, set off like bloody clappers, and through the night, roaring through the night, because they came to the village of Ballon St. James and Tangri. There was across the road, there were barriers that crashed them out of the way, right through into it. So, among the days, they thought it was super tanks, you know, I think. What the hell they thought. But, anyhow, with this bus spread out into the fields round about, dawn comes, and they're all around, as they say. So, then the fighting started, but it was mostly machine fire.
Yeah.
So we took the first one, took the second one, and as the troops were fighting, the British were in the front of the house, the bloody Germans were in the back of the house.
Is that close?
Yeah. Chased one run in the house, and we had the Black Gardens. Of course, there were a lot of casualties, you know.
Yeah.
Not the Germans, you know. So, a lot of armands. So I was there, company. My old friend and comrade, Walter
Haig, is this, Tom?
No. Walter Eastwood.
Walter Eastwood.
He was stretched about, of course, he had the tape tied around with a cross on, you know.
Yeah.
So he went out and he brought, wounded in, he went out and brought some more in. Went out to a canvasser, shot him. So.
Just if you stop there a second, Tom, because Walter Eastwood was the chap with the pay book, wasn't it?
That's him, yeah.
Earlier on in Normandy.
Yeah. I know him from 1939.
Yes.
John Teller, the commander of the cash.
Yes.
came from Mount Linden.
Mm.
So, another old mate of mine got killed there, Walter Haig. He was a cop in the vehicle, mate, who took over. It made up when I finished, and had this dispute about this.
Mm.
I was demoted. Mm. So, that was, and there was quite a few casualties there. Some of them must have died after, didn't kill straight away.
Yes.
Because I heard about Walter Eastwood. He said he'd been shot in the stomach and guts.
Mm.
And he threw him away, he must have died. So that is why he's buried at Highwood.
Highwood, is that First World War cemetery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extension it was.
Yeah.
And the other one, which you gave me the addresses up there somewhere.
Yes.
Walter Haig is buried further north.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
Found a part for some reason.
Mm.
So we cleared those three places. We went forward. This old chap in now is telling about this German gun round down this bend, this narrow road. And they came out with the gun and they fired at the Jeep. And my dear friend, before that, Captain Hawkins.
Yes.
Rushed into this place. He said, get out the jail engine. So he got out and then he got captured.
Hawkins did.
Mm. So then the what do you call it, went up. D company was Major Lake, the CEO, and they go in the Jeep up the shore to see if any high banks, you know. And
yeah.
When they get round this corner, they see a light field and station.
Mm.
So it fires at them, but it missed. I don't admit if it missed them. So the reverse group got around the doings, but some were knocked unconscious. Anyhow, we cleared it eventually.
Yeah.
And then we cleared that area, which the tanks have been to previously. We cleared the Valuan and Chains and Tangri, which, what I've read since, was the Accrington Powells went through in the First World War.
Oh, right.
So we were following in those predecessors.
Yeah.
So we moved from then on. And we went right across the battlefield and we finished at Armentieres.
Yes.
In Armentieres, through there, we didn't stop long there. Then off again till we went through the docks at Antwerp.
Yeah. Now, yes, so when you say, because you seem to have moved pretty quickly now.
We were moving fast. Yeah.
Because there's some very important stuff that happened there, but after Falaise, the Germans were moving as fast as they could go, presumably.
Yeah, they're really on the run, yeah.
Hmm.
They could have been bypassed by the armoured cars, the armoured divisions going up, they were taking different time. So when we was there, some of them was into Antwerp,
hmm.
the armoured cars, and hmm. some were further right in other cities.
Mm.
Well, what the infantry did is catch up with them, who wasn't army, and they to mop up what they had left.
Yeah.
And that's what we were doing.
Yeah. So you must have been going from Falaise to Antwerp. A lot of that journey must have been made by transport.
Yeah. Any transport we could use. There's too many for us. They were even going on the guns and all, you know.
Mm.
So many on that because the transport was not loaded.
Yeah.
Of course, with casualties, they all fitted on, so we swept in till we went into Antwerp.
So, this is what sort of date, Tom, is this?
It'll be September, wouldn't it be in September?
I guess it's September.
So, we took over the docks there.
Yeah.
And A Company moved into these flats, they were, and they were four story high flats. And there was like a H. He was in the back there, then it had a big open space with the grass all around, and he went through the middle part of the H, through that into the second open space, and the third one was overlooking the docks.
Yeah.
Now, the company office was where we had it, was in one of these lower rooms in the flats, with all the communication wires all wired up and that.
Mm.
And I was there with the A Company. So, well, we were there, and there was Shannon coming from Jerry from all the dog firing at us, and so on. And the Manchesters had an observation post at the far side, like I said, in the top of the flat. and he could leap over the docks, and he could see the Germans massing on the other side of this canal.
Yeah.
And he came to us, and he said to us that we have no communication, we cannot get through to our headquarters by the wires or anything. Is there any way you can do it? Words to that effect. So I said to Major Griffin, I said, well, sir, there's outside there, there's a smashed up very long there, there's loads of German cable and telephones, we could use that, we could lay it across to them and join into the light, do it.
Mm.
That's all. Obviously, they went to me, but he did it. And we need to stop it again.
Yep. Right, Tom, you were talking about this connection that you were making to the Manchesters.
So, Major Griffin said, do it. So, obviously, lead the cables right through the first part of the flats, right through the second part of the flats, up to the top, the stairs where the Manchester Forward Observation were watching them on the other side of the canal. We came into their telephone, we came back then, and joined our end, of course, we joined onto this German telephone, what we fixed up. No, didn't lie. We joined up to their telephone, and then I came back, and we paired the connection into the gate line that was, that was running down the door. It had the tabs on, the gate had caught the stone as well.
Yeah, carry on.
So, consequently, they opened up with the machine guns,
mm-hmm.
and they wiped out in under the side of the kiln. I don't know, that was a lot. So everything went quiet. Major Griffin went somewhere, going around particular company, I suppose. I don't know where he gone. So everything went quiet, and I could hear this motorbike coming up the road, stopped outside. And in comes Captain Hawkins, the signal officer, looks around. He's got the system, he's got the system. He's about 5 foot below. He looks around.
You just showed me then that he was playing with his cuffs, his shirt cuffs or something.
What is this coming down the inside the door? I said, it's Manchester, not Manchester. Whatever company was, they said, oh, it's due. What's this? That's the gear line. What's this line here? I said, going to Manchester. He knew it. Who's connected that to the Manchester? I said, I have, sir. Who are you to interfere with the gear communication? I said, well, sir, it tells you. I said, the Manchester came and they wanted to get through. Well, you have no right to interfere with the gear communication. I said, so it's an emergency, and I did it. You should not have bloody done it. I said, yes, but I asked Major Griffin and he told me to do it.
Hmm.
I ain't a bloody thing, what's not Major Griffin, he said. So he didn't listen that, and off he went. And so I got it, not the other 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Good on charge. So when I come back out, like I find where I was upset, and Major Griffin came in the room, he said, what's to do with you, Neary? Is it? I said, that's what he said to him. I said, nothing, sir. And he was looking at me, I said, what is it? I said, the signal officer's been here. And of course, as it's like, he gave me a rollicking, I said, about interfering with brigade communication. Didn't you tell him? I said, yes, sir. He said, what did you say? I thought, I shouldn't have said it, sir. He said, he's a bloody signal officer, not you.
Yeah.
He said to, I had a bloody signal officer before he come up.
Yeah.
Off. Gone. Oh no, he got on the telephone and it was a Tele-F, not the buzzer, gone five and ring. Exchange speaking, sir.
The chap at the end of the phone, yeah.
Daughter for Shank Elliott.
Yes.
Nelson. Get Hawkins. Oh, sir? Get Hawkins on that bloody phone. And it calls. Not here, sir. Can't find he's not here. I don't know where he is. Right, bang, front the phone, gone. And they must have gone to Parley Shoe with the Jeep.
Yeah.
Where they were. Gone from Alta Place. So.
Yeah.
I'm in the doghouse a bit, and they came back.
Well, because So if I read it right there, you were still on this charge, or possible charge,
yes,
that he threatened to put you on.
Right.
And now you're in a double lot of trouble here, according to him.
Again, yeah.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it went off, and we saw him not quite enough. So then he said to me, when he came back, right near here, there's a platoon right forward in these barracks, he said. Take the 18 set with you and get, I suppose, our own jankers, get put there with them. So I was with them for 4 days, and that's where little Bob was.
Yeah, little Bob Atkinson, yeah, that was with a rifle,
right,
rifleman,
so
from
a platoon, you see, right, yeah, forward. And we had the, what they call the White Brigade with us, which was the German, the Belgian,
yes, yes, underground movement, yeah.
So we were there for
a while. But who sent you there? Was it Hawkins that sent you there? Griffin sent you there.
Yeah.
Get out of the way, Tom.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I was there for 3 or 4 days, and they pulled us out, and we moved down to Antwerp Station.
Okay, Tom. Well, with this set, tapes coming to an end, so we've come to an end there at Antwerp, really,
right,
and you're about to move out from Antwerp,
Antwerp,
and we'll continue that on the next tape.
That's it. So how many tapes is that now?